Hello, Polytopians. Thanks for tuning into the Polytopian Times. I'm your host, Sam, and today we are joined by eSpark. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Hi, Sam. How are you doing today? You ready to which tribe are we doing?
We're doing Kiku today.
Kiku. Yay! Fishing! Let's go!
Yeah, this is going to be fun. All right, well, let's jump into it. The afternoon sun sparkles across the aquamarine waters below you as the ship taking you to the Kiku town of Manu Okisi cuts through the bay. The waters here in the bay are much calmer compared to the choppiness of the open ocean, for more than once you risk succumbing to seasickness as the occasional storm rocked your ship to and fro. Thankfully, the Kiku sailors crewing the vessel are some of the best in the square, coming from the same stock as the crew of the legendary Inukuli, the first ship to sail to all four corners of the square, the Kiku Triumph. Around you, the bay is full of life, schools of fish swimming through the waters, and above them, dozens of canoes dart around, some fishing, some racing, and some just enjoying a leisurely cruise. In the center of the bay, there's a large floating wooden platform, what looks like a Hakilani arena, a game unique to the Kiku. The bay forms a horseshoe of sandy beaches, framing dense tropical jungle. At the center of the horseshoe is the bustling port and the town of Manu Okisi. The crew had furled the sails as the ship entered the bay and had switched to using long, sweeping oars to bring the ship to the docks. Once they arrived at an open one, the oars only pushed enough to move the ship slowly into position before coming to a rest themselves. The deck of the ship sees a final stirring of effort on this voyage. The other passengers that had brought many belongings were looking for the sailors to help them unload, while the few near you that had packed light were ready to depart, with no need to go down to your cabins for a final visit, unlike some others. The sailors were busy settling into port, tying the ship up, stowing equipment, serving as stewards for the passengers as need be, and of course as their availability opened up. In a few more moments, two crew members came up and lowered the gangplank so those who were ready could depart. You move with the crowd onto the dock and head towards the beach, leaving the pier behind. The town dominates your view as you walk up the beach, with wooden buildings with still green banana leaf roofs framed by the verdant jungle behind them. Further still punctuated by dramatic pillared basalt cliffs jutting into the sky far off, the only form of geographic elevation on this island. The jungles here are full of palm trees, and hidden amongst the jungle you can find plentiful banu, a delicious yellow fruit unique to this tropical locale. Banus aren't the only thing you can find out in the jungle. The koyoi bird is a common sight, being the primary herbivore in the jungle, and quite a prosperous one at that. You're hunted by the Kiku both for their meat and for their bright green feathers, which are worn in the ceremonial headband of every Kiku. Although you will find the koyoi birds to be the most common resident of the jungle, a far deadlier denizen lurks in the dense foliage, the liun. They're large felines with orangish-yellow pelts speckled with black spots on the lithe build of the body. Their litheness is due to their specific geographic adaptations, designed to forge them into something unique, the square's fastest predator, able to outrun a chevron at full gallop. The liuns have easy pickings hunting the koyoi birds as a result. However, due to their lighter frames, they don't prey on animals larger than themselves, and in fact prove to be extremely intelligent and social animals, extremely friendly with their polytopian neighbors. As a result, the liun has become a staple animal of Kiku society, both as pets and as mounts to capitalize on their immense speed. Manu Okisi is a bright place, as bright as the paradise surrounding it. The buildings are almost all built out of palm lumber, a wood that yellows after being cut. Even then, it is still visibly green in hue. Being a tropical place, the windows don't have glass in them, and the vibrantly green banana leaf roofs allow for pleasant circulation of the breeze. The few stone buildings you can see are markedly more wealthy in nature, signifying local commerce leaders and nobles. Even those have banana leaf roofs. On the outskirts of the town, there are even a few tree houses up in the sprawling branches of the old-growth trees. The port leads up to the town's main square, where the markets can be seen selling fish, fruit, meat, and all other sorts of goods besides food. The town hall is a large three-story stone structure with a banana leaf turret at the center, easily visible above the other buildings. The rest of the buildings in the square are two-story, with shops on the ground level and living quarters above that. On the left-hand side of the town square is the inn, an old friend of yours, Owens. You first stop on this island. Beyond that, houses sprawl out all around the main square, a jungle of polytopians amongst the morass of vegetation. You stop in front of the Poluin, named after the heroic protagonist of the most important Kiku lore. It's a popular theme that's kept business steady since your friend had founded it, back when the Kiku had first settled this island 17 years ago. The sign above the door of the inn did its best to channel that motif, featuring Polu canoeing amidst giant waves that formed each of the letters. Stepping inside, you see a normal enough-looking inn, wooden tables with chairs full of rowdy Kiku drinking and playing cards, windows in the wooden walls overlooking the bay, and the wooden bar itself. Polu makes himself known here. Behind the bar are a series of images showing off each of Polu's legendary adventures. There's Polu creating fish, Polu journeying to Karapu, and Polu fighting a variety of mythical beasts, including what looks like a seven-headed hydra. Waiting for you at the bar is your old friend, Mako Numono, an acquaintance from your old days with the Yadok Trading Company, the penultimate captain that had escorted much precious cargo through hostile seas. There was no better captain available back then, and even in his retirement, Mako exudes quiet confidence behind the bar. You can't resist and have a few drinks, doing some catching up on the time that's passed since you last met. Business has been well for Mako, and the upcoming Pelona Fish Ceremony looks to be a big opportunity for the inn. The Pelona Fish Ceremony is an elaborate canoe-bound ritual, where a series of fans and nets are used to stir the water, creating what the Kiku believe were currents that could bring bounties of fish through the movements and rhythms of the ritual. You certainly have a doubt over the superstitious nature of the ceremony, but the Kiku certainly have abundant fish harvests to boast of. After a few more drinks, the true intent behind your trip surfaces in your conversation. You're heading to the Temple of Polu on the island to meet with a potential client on their pilgrimage. Mako is, as always, reliable, and he points you in the direction of a guide who can take you there. It'll be half a day's journey through the jungle, up to the base of the basalt pillars where the temple lies. If you hurry, you might be able to make the trip by nightfall. And you could make camp outside the temple, awaiting your client. You thank Mako profusely and promise to come back to visit soon, before heading back out to the town to find your guide. You look about the town at the Kiku, athletic tan polytopians with long black hair and red headbands of ceremonial purpose bedecked with green koyoi feathers, the first and the greatest sailors, and a fun-loving people, and take a moment to look for a polytopian with a scar over their eye. That would be your guide. You don't see anyone on the beach matching the description, although plenty of Kiku are out racing on the beach and wrestling on the sand. Canoes are headed out to the Hakalani platform. A game looks to be starting, the players riding their platforms and swatting a small ball between each other over a fishing net strewn across the middle of the platform, separating the teams. They'd soon be at play, and in the frantic motions of trying to keep the ball from touching the ground on their side soon, one of the players would inadvertently stumble off the platform, earning their team a penalty. You wish you could stay around and watch the game, but there's no time. Scanning the market, you finally spot your guide bartering for Banus. You head over and mentally prepare for your upcoming journey through the jungle. Well, that's a quick rundown through their lore, and lore is fun as always, but now let's take a look at some of the other reasons that actually make this tribe worth playing, right, D-Spark?
Yeah, thanks for that lore. I always enjoy your lore. There's so much in there. You got it all. The
thanks, the yeah.
Animals, what are they, the loons? The fruit,
banu. Oh, the banu. Yes, yeah.
The little feathers on their head. What's that? The bird?
The koyoi bird. Oh. So, I mean, I know they technically hunt the loons in game, but in my head canon, they're hunting koyoi birds instead.
Mm-hmm. And there's that game that's like tennis.
Oh yes, the Hakalani game. Yeah, and that one's interesting. So it's just tennis at sea on a floating platform. I mean, you get a penalty if you fall off, so don't do that.
I think I'd try playing that. I'm a good swimmer. I didn't play. And I'm okay at tennis, so I think I'd do all right at the hockey line game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, looks like we've got a burgeoning champion here.
So do you like Kiku? Do you like to play Kiku, like, as a tribe?
They're not bad. If I'm going to be 100% honest, I don't honestly use them all that often. I like to have a little more versatility. And, as we look at some of their resource and terrain spawn rates, while they're good at sea and they're okay at land, they're not as good as some other tribes when it comes to, like, a ground confrontation. I do think that, my play style likes to be able to handle that a little better if need be. So, I mean, more specifically, So, off the bat, they have twice as much water as other tribes would spawn with, and beyond that, they also have 150% the fish spawn rate in their lands.
That makes sense. Lots of fish.
Yeah, lots and lots of fish. Unfortunately, though, they only have half the normal default mountain spawn, so you aren't going to be looking at them in terms of mining for economic growth, although...
I wouldn't say unfortunately. If you're going to play Kiku, you don't want mountains. They just get in your way.
Yeah, you don't want to block up the perfect customs house spot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is not a tribe you want to be playing if you wind up on a continent where you're sharing it with another player. Your Vengir friend is going to have a great time, and you're going to have very little reason to find any sort of melee unit that can stop them.
Oh.
Yeah. Well... let's look at their techs. So you get a lot of fish. You get to start with fishing. That's pretty self-explanatory. Makes sense. As far as perks and drawbacks go, there's not a lot to go on here. They have a strong economy. They get to the sea really fast. They're the sea people. There's really only like two other tribes that could even potentially claim to compete with that. And
like
really...
Aquarian, right? Like, they're obviously more ocean... or they're really, that's all they got. but I don't know. I think Kiku and Aquarian are really the ocean ones.
Oh, absolutely. I find players to be this interesting blend in the middle. You know,
Polaris. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Well, players, Polaris, we'll see. I haven't been corrected on that one yet, but it'll, who knows? I'm hoping this one's a tomato tomato situation.
yeah. Yeah. Can be good on water maps, like, as well, for sure.
Yeah, but you're not wrong. Technically, every single one of their units is a land unit, and they cannot touch the water at all. But their power comes from turning the water into a land that no other units can leverage like they can. Right. So I don't know. It's a weird mix. But yeah. Well, I mean, that's like a nice look here. Honestly, the only drawback with Kiku is... well, not great potential on dry lands maps. It's not to say they are playable, but you're only going to have two tiles of fish in it.
Like we were talking about before, the only time I would ever choose Kiku on a dry lands map is if it's a mirror match and everyone's playing Kiku. That can be really fun, and it's a popular choice for some of the tournaments, like the Bullet tournaments and PolyLive. They would pick dry lands Kiku because it can be a really interesting matchup.
As a recommendation for any of the folks who like to take on the challenges Polytopian Times throws out, here's one from you, Spark. You know, do a cage match, but Kiku on dry lands, see what happens in the
mirror match Kiku.
Oh, me match, sorry.
Only if everyone is playing it. Otherwise you're just asking for a quick death.
yeah although I mean, cage match with like 9 players all playing Kiku, that could be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enough babbling about all the fun stuff on the other side. Espark, would you mind leading us through some strategy for these fishy people? The sea people need some speaking of.
Yeah, I mean, you said it before. Really, their strong suit is getting a navy and getting a lot of income with the custom houses.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. That's probably your big thing. I mean, I might have maybe something to throw in. There's like some advice you can have when it comes to building up your economy in the early mid game to think of. I mean, let's look at the starting off bit first, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, anytime you have a T0 tribe, send your warrior to where you think there's a village and upgrade your capital. I usually pick a workshop, and then it just depends on what you find, right? If you're on an archipelago or something, you may not want to make a lot of warriors. It just depends on how the terrain is laid out. But if you're on a continent, then yeah, you got to get out your warriors to find some villages, and then once you get the coast, you just go for ports.
Yeah. No, I feel you there. Getting that early navy is really nice. And, I mean, you get it earlier than most other tribes can get to sailing. I mean, you can get it, what, by turn 5 easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always try to keep in mind when I'm playing Kiku, I'm always on the lookout for where is the best custom house spots. Sometimes
yes.
you really have to think ahead and think about, you know, either expanding borders or, like you said before, if there's a mountain in the way, it's like, nope, can't put one there. And then sometimes forests are in the way. If you're playing a game with a really big map and you have a lot of time before you're going to meet your opponent, then it might be worth it to get forestry to cut down, you know, chop that spot to put the perfect custom house spot. But if you're in a smaller map and you're going to meet your opponent right away, don't wait to cut down that forest. Just find another spot for your custom house.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I mean, you want to think about that every time you're laying down those ports. Like you said, it's you want to plan for those customs houses as best as you can. I mean, above beyond that, so in your early development, if you're going across the sea and you've got a port down in your capital, or you've got a road from your capital to a city that does have a port, you can do this little snowball effect as you get new cities where you only need to really invest 9 stars. You'll need a total of 14 to pull this off, but you'll get 5 back, taking it down to a cost of 9 stars per city to level it up 2 levels.
I love doing that. I love placing a port.
Yeah.
Getting that 5 stars back from the connection with the capital. That it can be a domino effect. It can be really great.
It is super useful, yeah. And to go into detail for the folks listening who might not be familiar. So you get your new village. It isn't leveled up at all yet. You say, get 2 fish. You spend 4 stars on that to level up. Get an explorer workshop, whatever floats your boat. Quite literally in this case. and then you slap down a port right next to that city, connecting it to your capital, which gives you 1 population for the connection for capital, and then an additional 2 population for the actual construction of the port, automatically leveling your city up. And you get the choice to get either walls or 5 stars back. You take 5 stars, it only costs you 5 stars to make that port, meaning it's a 5 star upgrade for your second upgrade.
Yay!
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty useful.
It's really good. And then, you know, eventually, if you can get 5 cities connected, you get the monument.
Oh, yes.
You don't need roads for that. If you can get it through your ports, you still get the monument.
And honestly, it's more useful to do it if you're Kiku and you're on a naval map. You want to have a bigger navy. You need to be able to produce more units per turn, get more units in the water every turn. So using ports instead of roads automatically may put you a step ahead in terms of just sheer naval production. If it's just farting out as many warrior boats as you can to be a meat shield, you'll have the edge.
Sometimes that's a really good strategy. Just get your boats in the water. Just get them out before your opponent. That can be totally valid. We should also talk about whales.
Yes, yes, and we definitely should. Would you like to take the lead on it? I mean, they're valuable.
Do you remember? So this used to be, I don't know when they nerfed Kiku. I don't remember how many months ago, but there was a time when you could start a Kiku game with, you know, 2 or 3 or even more whales within your borders, and people would just spawn shop. You know, they would just start over and over and over until they got lots of whales. You cannot do that anymore. But whales, I think, are still really important for Kiku.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, obviously, you get 10 stars back. You'll want to think about when to get said tech. You know, you want to try and time it when it'll be beneficial to you. If the tech only costs you 6 or 8 stars, you make 2 or 4 stars in profit off of that whale, as long as you have a whale in your borders when you get it. If it costs 16 and you're going to be losing 4 stars, or, you know, whatever the cost will be, 12, whatever the cost is, you know, if it's above 10 and you're at a negative, you want to either couch that in the knowledge that you're going to be moving towards aquatism for supremacy of the seas, or with the understanding that maybe there's whales coming up, and if you can get it at this cheaper cost before you found a city that you can then expand the borders of using, say, monuments or something, might be worth it investing at that moment. But in general, you want to try and do it when it's profitable for you, or if it is any way to give yourself a little bit of an edge while stepping over to, again, naval supremacy, because aquatism is the one tech that makes the biggest difference in naval warfare, in my opinion. Navigation is a close rival.
I say my favorite thing is so satisfying is when you take a gamble, right, in your Kiku, and maybe you have a little island city and you expand the borders, and then you get like three whales, and then you're like, woohoo, whale jackpot. I mean, but it's a gamble because sometimes, you know, if you have fog and you can't see that deep ocean, but you know, okay, I think there's ocean there, there's a good chance you're going to get a whale. But yeah, it's a roll of the dice.
Yeah, it's all up to the fates there. Speaking of exploring on that, just something to keep in mind if you're going for explorers as Keku and you're on a naval map, you know, don't do it if you don't have sailing. You don't want to have him run around
Yeah.
a three tile island.
So this comes up a lot when I'm playing Poly Champions games, and, you know, with juniors. I'm a junior, but you know, it's very common strategy to get an explorer maybe on your second city. But if you know, are on a continents map or archipelago map, don't do an explorer unless you have the tech, because an explorer cannot go over deep water unless you have navigation. So a lot of times it's not worth it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's just something to keep in mind. Besides, with this Turn Zero tribe, there's no nothing but extra benefit in becoming an even bigger economic powerhouse in the later game, right? Well, I guess the mid game by the late game doesn't matter. Your customs
Did I
houses will
tell
eat
you
it up.
this story? When I first started playing Polytopia,
Yeah.
and this was before I had multiplayer, I was just playing single player, and I was trying to get, you know, 2 or 3 stars, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I just stuck getting 1 stars, and I didn't understand. And then I finally went to the wiki, and I read some strategy guides, and I read about custom houses, and I was like, oh, you can make so much money off the custom houses. And then I got my 2 stars and my 3 stars, and then bots were boring, and then I just started to fight, you know, human opponents. But
Yeah.
and figuring out how to get custom houses working, get that synergy where you have, you know, overlapping custom houses on ports, like, oh, that's the way to get your economy just revved up.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. It they're the honestly one of the meta defining things you can do, especially in terms of naval warfare. And on the subject of naval warfare, before we leave the topic of Kiku strategy behind, we probably should give some basic naval tips while we're here. So some
Wait, I
basic
only have
ones.
one
Oh
giant
yes.
battleship. That's it. Just spam giant battleships, done.
Game one, you just need a fleet of GBS and nobody can stop you.
That's
Yeah.
it.
Nah. Yeah, no, it's not I've done that once or twice. It's fun. But you have to be playing against a noob who doesn't realize that you're sitting around farming giants. what if you don't have a bunch of giant battleships? Well, you need to put something else into the water, and warriors are they're okay, they only have 10 health points. At the end of the day, the only value that matters out of the unit you're well, there's two values that matter in their stats and matter in terms of the naval comparison you want to get out of that unit, and that is the health points of the unit and the cost of the unit. You want the lowest cost to spend on this unit to get it into the water, and you want as much health points as you can get. Warriors definitely dot the box when it comes to the lowest cost to create a unit. They only have 10 health points, and that sucks, especially once you start having to upgrade your boats into something that can actually fight at sea. You don't want to spend 5 stars on a unit that's going to have a third of its health gone, compared to a competitor who might say have gone with defenders who are going to
Yeah.
give you a 15 health point battleship at only what, an extra star? That's, man, we've said this before, that is the way forward in naval warfare terms.
I think it's okay to put out warrior boats, you know, when you're just
Yes.
exploring and getting going. But one of the players I play with, he's really smart, TR, he basically says, don't bother upgrading to a battleship unless it's either a giant or a defender. Like, you don't want
Yeah.
to pump all your resources into a unit like a warrior to turn it into a battleship. Save it till you have some more robust foundation for that boat. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. It's excellent advice to keep in mind. And I mean, above and beyond going for your 15 health point ships instead of 10 health point ones, what you want to do is also try and get aquatism at some point. So if we look at defense and attack values for all our units at sea, Boats are kind of miserable. One attack, one defense. Not so great.
Boats are okay in the beginning. If you can just get those boats out, if you can get your boats out ahead of your opponent, it's great. And boats are good for, what do we want to call it? Like doing a blockade, right?
If you
put your boats in front of those giant battleships, it can slow them down for you to get your own battleships going.
Absolutely. You know, I am in 100% agreeance with you here. Boats are 1,000% better than absolutely nothing at all. fill up that space.
Better than nothing, boats.
Yes. Yeah. If you want meat shields, that'll be a little meatier. You get aquatism on there. And what it does is it gives your units a 1.5%, 150% their defense value. So let's take that one. It becomes 1.5. Not so amazing, but it's almost two. It almost makes it as good as a warrior at sea, which is... for the cost that you've thrown it out, not too terrible. If you look at ships, this is where things start to get a little juicier. Now, here we hit the point where the rival ship, say you're in ship-on-ship warfare here, beforehand, a ship attacking did 2 damage, and the ship defending had 2 defense. It kind of neutralized itself out. It was like warrior warfare, you know, almost a zero-sum equation in some ways. However, once you introduce aquatism to one of the sides, now the side that attacks the side that has the defense bonus is going to be coming at a ship that has 3 defense instead of 2 defense, meaning it's going to be stronger in defense and retaliate quite punishingly. Which means the person with aquatism just has to keep pushing more defender ships out in the front lines to eat up damage and retaliate more damage than they receive. Especially effective against warrior ships.
And I would add, you know, by the time you can afford aquatism, I would hope you already have a lot of custom houses and you have a good economy. But the other thing to keep in mind, especially in the early game, is fog, right? If you can keep track of where your opponents can see and you attack from their fog, they cannot attack you back.
Yes.
So that's really key, because that's in the early game before you have aquatism, right? Before you have any of those later techs, to use the fog to your advantage to shoot and not get retaliation.
And you really should leverage it as often as you can. It won't last forever, but savor it while you can. Sometimes you push the advantage enough, you'll just get the win off the bat because they can't see you to retaliate. Mm-hmm. but beyond that...
Counters? What's the best way to counter Kiku?
Yes. Well, there's not a lot of counters for Kiku. So you could do the usual advice we have for a turn zero tribe. Forward settle them. Yeah, give them some early pressure to force them to divert some of their early game income into war and unit production and away from city development, try and hamper their ability to grow their economy further while you grow in the background. However, that's a costly strategy, and it's not a guaranteed anything, but it's certainly viable in its own right. You're just not going to easily be able to out-economy them at the end of the day. They're strong, and they're turn zero tribe. If you're barter, you'll have a solid chance of dominating their economy. If you're imperious, you might find yourself at more of a stalemate.
It all depends on the map, right? I mean, if
it's
a lakes map or dry lands, no, then Kiku's in trouble.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, it depends on your lakes map. Some of these suckers I play, it feels like there's an inland sea and Kiku's doing A-okay. They're on a peninsula surrounded by water.
Yeah, that's true. Depends on the map. Does it more water, the Kiku does better, right?
So. Yeah, but I mean, you're right. They are guaranteed a bad time on dry lands, unless you're doing that weird thing where everybody is.
Unless you're doing that weird mirror where everyone's, then it's fair, but But I love playing Kiku again, and when you hit that whale jackpot, it can be so satisfying.
40 stars in one turn. Is like, oh, how do I spend this money? I just have to I just have to believe. So I mean, at the end of the day, we ask ourselves, why would we play as the Kiku? Is pretty simple. So you can be the first people in the water, and so you can be a dominant force in the naval game from basically the start onward. Not much else to say here.
Yep, I agree. Go for your navy, go dominate that water, and then rake in the stars with your custom houses.
Yeah, 1,000%. Well, folks, that wraps up our episode on the Kiku. Thanks as always for joining us.
This was fun. Thanks, Sam.
Of course, we try to keep it somewhat fast, Polytopian, so I apologize if I blurred through the lore a bit. Next week, we're coming up to the once proudest and now potentially the most miserable of the Polytopian tribes, the Luxador, looking upon their former glory.
But Sam, you said you're going to send me a Luxador game, right?
Oh, yes, yeah, we're going to have to do one. I've been, a dirty little secret, Polytopians, about this week's episode. For the last year, anytime I've done a tribe episode, I've made sure to play a couple of games in the week or two preceding the episode, just so I can be quite familiar. But this time, for Kiku, I just relied on prior experience. I didn't play a game last week.
You've been playing this game so much. It's all right. You remember how the tribes work. It's okay.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad someone could forgive me.
But we'll play a Luxador match before the next one.
Yes, man. Looking forward to it. Well, Polytopians, as always, thanks for tuning in, and until next time, see ya.